Is a lecture by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
First of all, there's the command in the Torah. The Torah says openly, the command of the Torah is that you must open your hand to the poor man. The command works both in the positive and negative. You must open your hand to him, don't close your hand. That means when you are asked for money, you must open your hand and give him money. The letter of the law, somebody asks for a handout, you are obligated to give him a certain minimum amount of money. What in halacha would be regarded as a pruta. A pruta means, nowadays, a pruta is probably around 3 or 4 cents. That's the minimum. If you give somebody, 10 agorot on the street, like 10 agorot, so you fulfill the obligation.
4 cents of a dollar.
4 cents of a dollar. Yeah. There is no other money in the world, right? Yeah, American money, real money. So 10 agorot is about the amount he has to give. I just had somebody in Gula, I gave drop 10 agorot in his thing, and he kindly asked me to take it back, right? So we'll talk about what you do when that happens. Right. But that is the minimum that you have to give when somebody asks for a handout. Now, there are 8 levels. You don't have to write this down. You could if you want to, but I'm going to try to get the, I owe you a couple of bag handouts, which has this all printed on it. Right, so I'll try to get that to you. There are 8 levels of charity. First of all, you have to try to help somebody before he becomes poor. That's the greatest form of charity, is that if you know somebody is on the way down. Right. Let's say there's somebody you know has a business, and all he needs, if the example the Gemara uses is that once a donkey, if a donkey is wobbly, let's say a donkey's carrying a load and it's wobbly, the load is starting to fall, all it takes is one person to keep that load up. One person can adjust the load. Once the donkey goes down, then even 10 people can't pick him up. Right? The Gemara uses, it's supposed to be an analogy for tzedakah, for charity. That when a person is, he's like on the verge of going under, if you help him, so one person, you can give him a loan at the right time, $2,000 loan or $500 loan could keep him, right. Once he goes down, right, so the first level is to help somebody before he goes down, right, try to lend him money or help him out with money before he goes down. Now, the next levels all deal with once you actually give somebody charity. So the underlying theme in charity is to try to spare the poor man's feelings as much as possible. Try to make him charity is something that is everybody's gut instinct is they don't want to take a handout, that there's something dishonorable about taking a handout. Therefore, you have to try to help him maintain his honor and dignity as much as possible when you give him the charity. So all the next levels to deal with, you'll see a certain gradation in how much the honor and dignity of the poor person you're able to maintain. The next level is where neither person knows each other. That means, if I want to give charity, I give it to you, and you distribute it to the poor person. He doesn't know who he's getting it from. I don't know who he's going to. So if I see him on the street, I never feel one-upsmanship on him, because I didn't know that he got my money. And he doesn't feel ashamed, humiliated to see me, because he doesn't know that I'm the one who gave him the money. Right? That would be the best level. That's the next level. The next is where the giver knows the receiver. Again, I'll give you the handouts. You'll have all these written down. The Rambam goes, these are all based on Maimonides. There's where the giver gives without being asked. That means that ideally you're supposed to give without being asked. When you know that somebody needs money, you're supposed to give without being asked. The next level is, it's not the first time this has happened, by the way. The next level is, but there is a rule that you do not interrupt, so there is a time and place for it. We're going to learn that also. The next rule is that you give after being asked. The next level is that you give less than you should, but you do it pleasantly. And the last level is where you give begrudgingly in your heart. I mean, if you give begrudgingly, if the poor person sees any sign of irritation on you, this is usually the ultimate test. If the poor person sees any sign of resentment on your part when you give him the money, you lose your credit. You do not get reward for having given him the tzedakah. Right, so that's the big test when you go to town or when you go to the wall, when the hand comes out at you and you feel like just saying, well, take it and go, leave me alone. Can a guy daven, you know, without being hassled for money, right? Well, how much of your davening going to be worth if you just yelled at a poor person? Right? But that is the reality is that's the test. Right? To see how you're going to respond under circumstances. Let's break it down into more details. First of all, how much do you have to give? How much does a Jew have to give to charity?
10%
after tax, correct. That means that it's not clear whether it's a Torah law, a rabbinic law, or a custom, but you have to give 10% of your money after taxes. Right? That means what your eventual profits are, your net profits, you must tithe 10% of that. If you want to keep a running calculation, then you can keep a running calculation. You've got money coming in from all sorts of different directions. If you work and you have investments and you have presence and so on and so forth, some people even on non-cash presence, somebody gives you a pair of shoes, some people calculate the value and then deduct 10% of that, right, and give away 10%. They accumulate that as a debt. Most people I know just give 10% of their liquid cash, give 10% of their gains. If you want, you can give as much as 20%. You are not allowed to give more than 20% because the halacha says you're not allowed to give an amount that can endanger your financial standing, that cause you to become a community burden. You have an obligation to do what the Torah tells you to do and not try to take care of the world all at once. Okay? Yeah?
Do you have to give 10% on the interest you have? So you can do it in a bank.
Absolutely, it becomes your profit.
So can you give the interest you earn as the 10%, say you earn 10% interest, and you give that as the 10%?
Let's say I have an account. I have $1,000 in the account. I'm using $100 a month. My profit is $100, so I have to give 10% of $100.
No, but okay, say you've got $1,000 and you earn 10%, you can't give the 10% as the 10% to charity.
But that's 100% you give.
That's not 10%, you're giving 100%. You don't have to give all that. No. You have to give, you know, so let's
no,
back
no,
up.
No, 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 I'm just saying, if I've got 10%, if I'm getting 10% interest a year, I put it in the bank, can I just 1 year give the 10% of the interest? Just the 10% of the interest as charity. The 10% interest that I'm getting, can I give it to charity?
That's what you have to give. The interest, whatever you're getting in interest, is considered an earning, and then 10% of that.
Just give the interest as charity, give nothing else, just the interest, the 10% interest as charity.
Depends on how much you've made in other areas. Is that clear to me what you mean exactly?
Say you got your $1,000 and you deposited in the bank.
Right.
And I'm getting 10% a year.
So I'm getting $100 a year from it, right?
A year later, can I give that $100 to charity as my 10%?
Then you're not giving 100%, you're not giving 10%, you're giving 100%.
And then give extra $10.
You're giving more than you should. You're giving more than you should because you're giving that 10% what you make. Let's back up. Let's say I win the lottery. Should happen soon. Right? I win the lottery. Right? Now, I make myself $1 million. Right? When I win the lottery, $1 million, and we've all had this daydream, you know, what would I do if I had $1 million? Right? I would give money to this. I would give money to that. We all know what we would do if we won. Let's say you win $1 million. Right? Now, first thing you do is $100,000 right off the top. Or if you want $200,000, if it's 20%, you can give that away. You give up to 200, you have to give away 10% of what you've just won. Now the rest of it, I have now got $800,000. See how quickly it goes? I've got $800,000 and I put it in the bank, right? And that generates 10% a year. That means I am now earning, I don't have to give charity off of that $800,000.
No, I know
that. I'm now earning $80,000 a year.
What I'm saying is if you put that million, you don't give any to charity, you put the million in the bank. When you earn your 10%, can you give it
give the entire 10% away. I see. Now I understand what you mean. You mean I never give the $200,000 away to begin with. Let it earn money and then start giving bigger sums of money. You can pay off. You can keep a debt. People walk around with an arm. I have written down all the time. Most people I know do that. How much do I owe tzedakah and how much does tzedakah owe me? I mean, sometimes I'll find somebody comes over to me and asks me for money for a certain cause. Right? Now I see that this month I'm already caught up to, or I intend, based on whatever else I'm giving to, I intend to catch up to my 10%. So I'll give him an extra whatever the money is, and I'll write that I'm ahead of my. You can do that, make the calculation any way you want. Each year at Rosh Hashanah you should be caught up. And you should catch up to yourself at Rosh Hashanah. So you've got a $200,000 debt. That's 200. It does not. It's a $100,000. They just cut your debt in half, right? It's worth consulting, you know. You have a $100,000 debt. However you take care of that, you take care of it any way you can.
right? However you want to do that, right? But you have a 100,000. You don't have to take it all and just give it all away right now. That you don't have to do.
You don't
tell them. By Rosh Hashanah, with each year you should bring your accounts. You should even out your accounts each year.
Is that a should or I have to?
You should have to. you should. You should. It's not absolutely obligated, but you should. You should. Right. You should, because if you don't, then you won't. Right. I mean, everybody, when it comes to money, you should. It's not absolutely obligated, but you should, because then you're running the risk. When it comes to money, people find ways one way or another to shirk their obligations. Right. We'll talk about that in a second. Now, the only time you can give away more is on your deathbed. I guess you want to say, if a person is about to die, then they have a right to give away large sums of money. Right? Because after all, they're going somewhere where they have to have some type of spiritual baggage to take with. Right? So a person on his deathbed is allowed to give large sums of money away. Right? Or if somebody is what's called in halacha an usher muflag. An usher muflag means somebody who is fabulously rich. Somebody who's fabulously rich could give away large sums of money. There was a very wealthy Jewish benefactor who was giving large monies away to Torah institutions, whose children took him to court. And they were trying to claim in court that their father is obviously not mentally balanced because he's giving away so much money, which they stood to inherit. Right? So these things happen. Right? But you have the right, if you've got big bucks, you have the right to go. And again, anytime if you have a halachic question, am I in the category of big bucks or not? Right? See a halachic authority. Right. If you have that question, right. If you get, first see me, by the way. Then we'll take you. I'll find you a halakhic authority. We'll decide if you are in the category of big bucks. If you are, right, then you are allowed to give away as much as you want. Good question.
Okay. You said that the Torah says that we're supposed to open our hands to the poor.
Right.
Where I live, there are homeless people and poor people almost on every block, and they're asking for money, and they're all poor, and. I give, when I see children and stuff, I give, but I just couldn't, I mean, it's on every block.
Okay, that's a good question. So I just saw this recently in the halakhic literature, I don't remember where I saw this, they ask, because by letter of the law, somebody sticks out a hand, you got to give them money. Right?
Now, every few minutes,
after the Masher Arm, after you go to the wall, and you're just accosted. So first of all, you may not be on a budget, you're on a very tight student budget, you may not have enough money to give everybody. So I think I heard in the name of, I think Rebel Yashiv, hey, if I'm not mistaken, said, like, what can you do? Then you can't give. Right? The Torah is not obligating you to do something that you can't do. You know, in Chutzlars, the situation is such that there are so many people collecting for so many causes now. Every person has, in a religious community, you are going to get a good 2, 3, 4 knocks on the door every evening for people coming around collecting. Now, if you're on a limited budget, you just can't. So if you can't. And we're talking about somebody who has the ability to give to everybody, so then you have an obligation. The guy's who live in New York, right? You ride the subway, right? Or you're just getting to the subway and you got to pass a whole row of panhandlers, right? You can't. It's just not practical. You can give away all your subway, all your transportation money. You just can't do that. And so then you don't have an obligation. Okay? So it's a good question. It comes up all the time. Yeah?
What about student loans? Let's say you're living on. So you have no, essentially no income or
debt. You mean because of tithing a student loan? You mean should you have an obligation to tithe it or
meaning give,
to give stuff off of that money?
Okay. And to what extent should one do that?
I don't think that the student loan is. I don't think the student loan is considered income. The student loan is borrowed money. That's not money you've earned. That's money that you're living on. That's money you have to pay back. That's simply right. That you don't have to tithe. You would have to tithe money that you have earned. Right.
Right.
You don't have to tithe a loan, especially when you're a student.
But it is considered income even if you're in debt.
On top of that,
you make $500 a year, you should give $10.
Correct. All that $500, that's independent of your student loans. That's correct. Right. Now, the halakha is that somebody who can't tithe his money, because when he tithes his money, he sees he doesn't make it through the month. So what is it in America? You still get paid, you get paid every 2 weeks, right? In Israel, they talk about making it through the month. Now they're talking about just being able to begin the month, right? But in Israel, they talk about the month, right? So if I can't make it through the month, right? So then obviously I don't have to tithe my money, because then it's self-defeating. Yeah, but if it's possible, then I have the obligation to do so, yeah.
So it's not 10% that follows on from this point. Is that 10% off the tax you've already set, but is it also off the basic living expenses?
No. You have to give 10% of your money. Sometimes you may have to adjust your living expenses. Right? But you consider your living expenses, maybe they have to be adjusted in order to be able to tithe your money. That's up to each individual. Right? But the calculation is after taxes.
After taxes.
Definitely after taxes.
If you make $30,000 and you end up with $22,000 after taxes, you get $2,200?
Correct. Now, there are a lot, some people may want to be stringent and give it before taxes. Right, but there are definitely halakhic authorities you can rely on that say it's after taxes. Yes?
What about the fact that various countries have various tax rates? So you can be in a country where, you know, 50% of your money is taxed, or another country where you are taxed a certain rate, and you have to end up spending the same amount of money, you know, for the same services someone else is getting for their taxes.
You should love this bit.
Well, that's
the taxes may be sort of charitable.
You can deduct it. You can make all sorts of deductions. Again, you have to, you know, sometimes when you enter the big bucks, then you have to the halakhic authority to find out what's kosher, what's not. The bottom line is, if I understand your question correctly, wherever you happen to be living, that's the tax bracket you fit into. Then you tithe whatever's left over. Right? Okay. So if other people are benefiting because you're paying so much.
Well, like say some countries you're taxed and that covers health care. Another country you're not taxed for it, you have to pay medical bills.
Right.
So, you know, that person's taxed more and they'll end up giving less on the same salary, whereas I still have the same medical expenses and I end up with the same net money, not including, you know, including taxes, not tzedakah, but then I have to give more tzedakah because I get taxed less.
Right. Like somebody said.
That's the way it is. That's
in Israel, by the way, you know, in Israel, they your average cab driver on the street is in about a 49% tax bracket. Right? People in this country to pay 49, almost 50% of your taxes is not at all unusual in this country. Right? So then the halakha would be that after taxes, none of that is my earnings. Now I've got to deduct my earnings. Right now, this is my earnings. This is a calculation. But look, you're living in Israel. I mean, not in Alabama, you're in Israel, so it's worth paying 50% tax. On the other hand, it'd be better to live in Israel and pay 25% tax, I agree, but that's what you pay. So then you have to tithe whatever's left over.
Okay.
These are complicated questions. I would say most of you are probably students or in some stage of studentness, right? At that point, while you are not necessarily obligated to pay the 10%, every Jew, no matter how poor, has an obligation to give tzedakah. But if you cannot, if you are in a category where you are not supporting yourself, then you are not at liberty to go and be tithing your money. Because it's not really your money, especially if you're being supported by parents. Then you're not necessarily at liberty to go and tithe your own money.
Shouldn't you have to tithe say your parents give you a monthly allowance?
That's not so clear. According to some, you don't, because your parents may tell you on condition that you don't tithe it. They may have tithed it already. Some say you do because it's the money you've earned. That right there is a very delicate point now.
Rabbi, if you are contributing to a shul as a tzedakah,
we'll talk about what you can give to in a second. What about membership fees and all those things? Yeah. We'll talk about what you can deduct in a second. Somebody else had a question. Yeah, go ahead.
Is there an estimate of how many people in Israel that don't do
it? How many people tithe their money? I don't know.
What percentage of people?
That I can tell you. But most Orthodox Jews, it's something that you live with. It's just an order. It's a given like anything else. Like Shabbos, there's tithing your money. How do you deal with it? Some people who are in difficult financial straits, they tithe their mother. And I give my money to you, you give me your money to me. Right? Because we're both poor. Right? that's what they suggest for people who learn in Kolo. People who learn in Kolo are barely making it. So just take your Kolo, take your temper, the step I used to suggest people. Take your temper and give it to the other guy. Not in good with you. You're not allowed to say openly that that's why you're doing it. Most guys in Kolo will figure out real quick. Right? Hey, Bernie, you know, I'd like to give you 10% of my check. Bernie should figure out pretty quick, right, you know, what the flip side is. You know, it should be too difficult. Right? But that's what they do. Or sometimes the head of a Kolo, right? Let's say a person's running a Kolo. So that's one of the things you're allowed to give your money for is Torah support, right? The right? The one of the things you give your money for is thorough support. The head of the COLEL, who goes himself collecting money for the COLEL, right, will sometimes give his COLEL members their check with the stipulation that their 10%, which you're going to give anyway, should go right back to him. Right, so that he could then, right, because he's anyway collecting for the goal, which is ultimately going to get to them, if you follow, the idea, right? So ultimately, all of these things are legitimate. You're talking about people who barely have enough money to be tithing their money anyway, right? But let's get to what you could be giving your money to. This gets tricky. I'll get to take questions in a second. What could you give money to? So first and foremost, the 10%, the idea of tithing your money is supposed to be for poor people. Now, there is a hierarchy in halakha of who takes precedence when you give money to charity. So we learned that, first of all, who is the first priority in charity? Your family, right? After your family also work in concentric circles, right? There's your immediate family, your outside family, then you can work further and further and further. Now, there's a halacha. Let's get it clear because somebody's going to ask later anyway. So let's get the answer by them. I've been asked already. Candy, what about non-Jews? What about giving charity to non-Jews? So the halacha is that why do Jews take priority?
Because they're one family.
Yes, correct. That means that the entire Jewish people are one family. If somebody asks, what is Judaism? Is Judaism a religion? Is it a system? Is it a nationality? What is Judaism? The family, right? That means in order to become Jewish, what do you have to do? You have to become adopted into Judaism, right? You can't just sign up. When you become Jewish, you can never become non-Jewish again. Right? Somebody who wants to become Jewish, somebody who wants to convert. So what they have to do is they have to go through circumcision, and then they immerse themselves in a mikvah. When that person goes down in the mikvah, if he changes his mind underwater, right, he's only got one, and he doesn't want to be Jewish, he's only got one choice. Right? He's got to drink out that whole mikvah while he's under there, right? Because the minute he comes up, he's Jewish. Right? And once he's Jewish, he can no longer go back on it. Right? Now, once he's Jewish, he's a family member. Now, since we're all family members, and the laws of charity, not just the laws of charity, it's what your own emotions tell you, that if you only had enough money for one person, one is your brother and the other is your cousin, who would you give it to? Assuming everything is, right? You give it to your brother, right? Therefore, in Judaism, there is a halakhic priority system of who you've got to give your money to, which makes a lot of sense. So, if I give money, I have to give first to my family members, then I must take care of the poor people in my town. They come first. If I've taken care of them, then I can worry about the poor people in a different town. If I've taken care of them, then I can worry about all the poor of the Jewish people. Once I've taken care of all the poor Jews, then I'm allowed to start worrying about the non-Jews. Since that hasn't happened in the last 2,000-something years, right, so then the halakha says, by the letter of the law, and again, it's important not to misinterpret it, by the letter of the law, you're not allowed to give charity to non-Jews. By the letter of the law, you're not allowed to give charity to non-Jews. Not because we have anything against non-Jews, but because we've got a hierarchy of priorities, and they are not within our priority system. However, there's something called Darkei Shalom. Have you heard of Darkei Shalom? Darkei Shalom means maintaining peaceful coexistence. That means if a Jew were to walk down the street, and somebody sticks out a hand, he says, what's your name? Chaim Goldberg. Here you go. What's your name? Yanko Schwartz. Here you go. What's your name? Billy Murphy. Sorry. Next. What's your name? If that was to happen, then people would see that, then what would happen is he could cause a pogrom, a desecration of God's name, a pogrom, and all sorts of trouble. Not as much a desecration of God's name, because the law says you don't have to. The problem here is we're worried about security, simply our well-being. The only time in Jewish history that Jews are exempt from such a thing is when we are living in the land of Israel in control of our destiny. That means at the time of the temple, we're not intimidated by anybody, we're not worried about what anybody thinks. There, you would not give charity to a non-Jew simply because you have to take care of your own first. Okay, that's the idea. The irony is that when you look in the Jewish world, Jews have always been known, and no matter whether they're Orthodox, Reform, Reconstruct, whatever Jews are givers. Right? Jews are always giving to some cause, usually to some non-Jewish cause, right? But Jews are always giving, right? It's in the Jewish genes to give. The irony is that we're always accused of, if you're already giving, how come you only give to yourself? Why don't you give? Well, one second, I got a very good idea. We'll all give to ourselves. right? The Zen Buddhists will take care of the Zen Buddhists. The Christians will take care of the Christians. Every group, however you break, let them take care of them. Why are we responsible for the rest of the world? Right? Go organize your own system. Why is it our responsibility? Because we happen to be Jewish, therefore, because we happen to be generous, therefore we're faulted for not taking care of the rest of the world. Doesn't make any sense at all. Right? Yet that's the irony and the unfairness of life, is that we're always blamed for that. Right? But that is the halacha. Okay, now, ideally, your money should go to charity. If you want, in charity, one of the priorities is if you can support people who are studying Torah, that's the highest form of charity. Any poor people, fine. If you want, you can give money to yeshivas. To yeshivas, you can give for periodically to support Jewish causes. Let's say they're building a mikvah in your community, and they need donations, so you can take some money and give to the mikvah. Right? They're building a school, you need some money to give it to the school. To take, use your miser money for what you suggested, like your shul membership, or paying your children's tuition, or things like that. Under extenuating circumstances, there are leniencies, but that should not be adopted as... Would you, let me ask you a question. If you belong to a country club, a health club, would you use that money from... Would you deduct that money from charity? It's, a lot of it is our attitude, right? The country club is something I want to do. Belonging to the shul, oh, that's that religious stuff. All right, I'll just deduct that off my deduct taxes. Right?
If you're a student who's getting an allowance from your parents,
obviously, if you're a student, yes, it's good. Students are a completely different category. Students are a completely different category of responsibility. Okay.
And someone said to me that sport, if you lay down sport because you maybe a young married couple that's really struggling financially. And you've got lots of sport in them, and you lend them out to people, that could be part of your tzedakah.
There are certain things you can buy from your tzedakah money, right? You could buy sforim, for instance, right? And you write in your name, this sforim is bought from tzedakah money, but then you don't own the sforim, right? They have to be lent out. You don't technically own them. And I asked one halakhic authority, he said to me, the inheritors, the next generation does not inherit them. They do not belong. If you bought them from miser money, they don't belong to you. Right, they belong to the community at large. They just happen to be staying in your house. That's the halacha. Okay, but the best thing to do is to give it to poor people.
Miser money,
miser means tithing. Right, you're right. I didn't explain it. Miser means to tithe. Right, it's a term generally associated with produce. At the time of the Beis Hamikdash, there was produce, and a certain amount of produce had to be tithed. Right, miser comes from the Hebrew word me'eser, one tenth. Right, so we use that in association with money also, that we say we miser our money, we tithe our money, we take one tenth of the money and give it away. Okay, there's also an idea of tithing your time, right? That you must give away a tenth of your time to help other, this is specifically to yeshiva students who are more experienced, that in your yeshiva learning program, Moshe Feinstein said that you must tithe your time, you must use a tenth of your time to teach those that are less advanced than yourself. You cannot deduct that. It's a very common question. You cannot deduct it from what you owe to tzedakah. That means I owe. So let's say I'm supposed to give tzedakah $100 a month. I can't work for 2 hours and I charge $25 an hour. Therefore, I'll deduct that from the money that I own. There is something very special about parting with money. The Torah wants us to part with money. Why? Because it hurts. Right? There's nothing more that hurts more than parting with good, perfectly good, usable cash. Right? That has an effect on, it's good for the receiver and has a special effect on the giver. And that's what the Torah wants. The Torah wants us to be parting with our money. Right? So to donate money, you know, when you invite somebody to your house, you would think nothing. A guy comes to your house, you give him a little, you give him some good food, you give him a meal. But after the guy asks you if he can make a long distance call. Right? It's understood that he's going to pay you for it. Right? That's cash. Right? The same guy who's in your house and you just gave him a meal worth $10, right? If the same guy would say, you know what, forget the meal, just give me $3 in my hand, right? No way. Right? To part with the money is very difficult. Parting with the money is very difficult. You must give it. There is something inherent about the money that we have such a love for. We have to train ourselves to be giving it away. We have to understand that whatever we have, we are only guardians over it. God gave us the money and he wants us to part with it. So we had a question. Let me hear the question. Yeah.
It's
Unless you have some special talent, I mean, I guess it's very important to learn everything. Suppose instead of working extra hours and then giving, you know, the 10th to tzedakah, suppose you want to donate your time to something. You're saying that it'd be better to make the money and give that?
Not better. It's a wonderful thing to donate your time. You have an obligation to do that. It's a wonderful thing. It's a tremendous mitzvah. You also have to tithe your money. You cannot deduct your income. You cannot subtract from what you give to charity because you've done something.
Well, you are living from hand to mouth.
So. If you're living from hand to mouth, then generally you have to, you know, do the best you can. But if you're living from hand to mouth and you can't afford to tithe your money, then yes, then work it off somehow. That's one thing you can do. They do that by day schools. Day schools are notoriously underfunded. Right? That means most day schools across the country, Orthodox day schools in the United States, have troubles meeting their budgets. So one of the things they do for kids that are on scholarship, right? So there are several things that they do. One of them is that the parents whose children are on scholarship have to put in a certain amount of work. You have to school to work off that debt. I mean, in all fairness, right? You know, other people are paying full tuition, so at a minimum, donate some of your time. Right, that's one of the things that they do, right, which is fair. But to rely on that as the way of paying off your tzedakah debt, that you can't do.
Please turn the tape to the other side.